member, California State Polytechnic College presents another in a series of interviews with distinguished retired staff members, their recollections and remembrances. This one is C.O. McCorkle. Mac, what was your first contact with Cal Poly? What was the first time you saw the place?
Well, I visited here in 1925. At that time, I was on a University California travel course, and we spent a day at Cal Poly. Coming in from the southern part of the state, we'd gone down as far as Imperial Valley and later went on as far north as Chico. And I can recall coming here in 1925. At that time, the dairy manufacturing unit was new. That was one of the things that we visited. We went out into the fields and looked at some of the agricultural projects that L.E. McFarland was operating. And I well remember the visit that we took here. There was about 20 of us on the trip.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you came here in later years to the Agricultural Teachers Summer Conference. That's true, isn't it?
That's right.
I guess you really had good times in those days. The group was small and had a lot of fun.
Oh, we had a lot of fun. Soon after, I guess the first year after I became an ag teacher in 1927, we had the summer conference here. It was either that summer or the following summer. And we came down, of course, I was at Red Bluff, and we came down as a part of the Superior California delegation. And we had a lot of fun. There's some of the things that went on then at those days that I guess I oughtn't to put on tape, but generally I can remember it as a pleasant association.
Now, Chester, you came down here in about January of 1932. Now, what were the circumstances of your employment and the reason why they wanted you here?
Well, of course, the contact was made by President McPhee when he was still chief of the Bureau of Agricultural Education. And I happened to be fortunate enough in the early history of the FFA organization, before it had that name, to have a couple of students from Red Bluff, one of whom was the Yell leader and the other was the first secretary of the state association. And I think Mr. McPhee was interested in building up that organization. And so he contacted me long in the fall of 1931. And I came here as a result in 1932. I suppose in those days, the money was one of the big elements, George. I got an increase by coming down here amounting to $50 a year. A year, that is, not a month. And the thing that's interesting about it was that it cost Avis and I $48.18 to ship the few household goods that we had at the time, so that took care of the first year's increase in salary.
Well, the one thing, it didn't boost your income tax very much.
Well, not much.
What were some of the first jobs you had when you came down here?
Well, I came here with three jobs, and as I look back over my experience with Cal Poly, that wasn't unusual. Everybody had two or three jobs. But I came first as director of the ag department, small department to be sure. I came, that was part-time job. A part-time job I had was assistant teacher trainer working with Sid Sutherland. And the other assignment I had was executive secretary, the one and only executive secretary that the California Association of Future Farmers ever had.
Not only did you come down, Mac, but you brought some other representatives of Red Bluff down with you. What were the circumstances there?
In those days, one of the things that was expected of any new member of the faculty at Cal Poly was to bring some students along. And if you could bring some students along that had some sort of a reputation in athletics or something else, this was a good idea. So when I came down in 32, I had arranged before I left Red Bluff for some of the students that were then seniors at Red Bluff to come down here in the fall of 33. And among those that came were Bill Owens, who turned out to be a pretty good end on the football team. Bob Bayless played guard. Collier Burris, a big six-footer, played the other end, opposite Bill, and then there was Jay Hart and one or two other boys who were athletes. And then there were some other youngsters came down, too, but that was part of the fulfilling of the obligation to go to work here.
Those boys looked pretty good. Howie O'Daniels on his first coaching assignment here at Cal Poly, I know that.
Well, that's right, and I worked with President McPhee in hiring Howie for that job, and if I remember correctly, I think we paid him $75 a month for his trouble.
That's right. That was a full-time job, too.
Yes, it was. Except I had a student store on the side.
Mac, in those early days, the taxpayers were pretty hard-pressed with the Depression and pretty critical of anything that didn't pay dividends. And as I recall it, there was a joint committee on problems in higher education in the legislature, and they made a report in April 1933 about the situation at Cal Poly. Could you tell me what it was that they said succinctly then?
Well, I think I can recall not only what they said, but something about the circumstances that led up to it, George.
Okay.
There had been a report made about 1932, which definitely recommended that the Cal Poly be closed entirely. There were different opinions as to what the property might be used for, but it was pretty evident that unless something major happened, there would be no Cal Poly. So it was about this time that President McPhee accepted the responsibility and later moved down. But this report to which you refer was a report that took into consideration some recommendations that the Department of Education, under Mr. McPhee's suggestions, had made. And this is what it said, among other things. It said that this committee believes that in view of the fact that the California Polytechnic School has been completely reorganized for the purpose of providing strictly technical institute types of educational opportunities and special fields, without duplication of offerings of other public schools, that the experiment, and this was referring to Cal Poly, be permitted to continue for another biennium. But it went on to say that it is, and I quote, it is definitely recommended, however, that the institution be discontinued if after a reasonable time it fails to demonstrate its effectiveness.
Well, Mac, certainly as a result of this kind of report and other stimulus, a recruitment program must have already been underway by the spring of 1933. What happened and how did it happen?
Well, one of the first things that I was asked to do when I arrived here was to work with this recruiting program. And, of course, recruiting those days wasn't limited to sending out a few brochures. We were expected to go out and contact high schools throughout the state. And so there was a team of fellows set up to make these contacts. They included all of the regional supervisors of agricultural education. They included all of the members of the teaching staff at Cal Poly, particularly those in the agricultural department. It included J.I. Thompson, included C.E. Knott, and a few others. But in order to send these people out, they had to be supplied with information about Cal Poly. And so we developed kits, sort of salesman's kits, with information about the institution and what were the possibilities for students who came here. There were success stories. There were pictures of some of these students who had been successful and had graduated. There were pictures of the facilities at Cal Poly. And of course, there were some application forms too, which each man had. And we visited, I think probably 80% of the high schools in the state at that time were visited by a representative from Cal Poly.
Mm-hmm. Now, how successful was this recruitment in the next two or three years?
Well, when I came in January 1932, we had 104 students. For the 33-34 year, which was after this recruiting got underway, We jumped to 239, which I think is about 105% increase. By 1934-35, another 50 or so were added. For the 1935-36 year, the enrollment reached 309.
And that was considered to be quite a fantastic figure for Cal Poly at that time.
Well, it was, because it was about three times as many students as there had been here for 6 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Mac, Mr. McPhee came down in 1933, and at the end of that first year was the first graduating class under his presidency and the technical institute type of instruction we had here. Now, what did the student get to show his completion of his work? What kind of a credential or certificate?
Well, we called it a certificate of completion. And in June of 1933, there were 45 certificates of completion awarded. 25 of these went to young men in agriculture, 20 to students in the industrial fields.
And isn't it true that those certificates of completion were primarily designed to help that student get employment in the area in which he was specifically trained, and would indicate that he had received a thorough training? Is that right?
Well, that's right, and in fact, the wording indicated what he was proficient in.
Okay. I know during the next few years, Mac, that Mr. McPhee reported frequently to the State Board of Education, State Department of Education, and legislative committees on what was happening. What was the gist of his report in January of 1935 to the State Board of Education?
Well, it was a lengthy report. It gave considerable detail, but there was one paragraph in it, George, that I think is important, and I'll quote this paragraph. All instruction at the California Polytechnic School is of a terminal character. The school is not preparatory for other institutions in any sense. The courses are designed to fit the graduate for ownership or foremanship or managership in the specific fields of agriculture and industry.
Now, it wasn't very long, though, before some of this was changed, and with Mr. McPhee's direction and permission, in that it was found that in some areas we were preparatory for giving our students opportunities to go on to other institutions. That is correct.
That's right.
But at the same time, they did get the basic education, which if they did not transfer, was certainly made them very employable and very valuable. That is true, too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Mac, as I recall it, the 2-year technical program was extended to 3 years, and then there began to be a demand on the part of students and parents and others for transfer status. Now, what happened in that period?
Well, as you suggested, George, parents, students, and employers were urging California Polytechnic Administration to devise some sort of a procedure so that Cal Poly students could be granted degrees. President McPhee was concerned, as were a lot of us here at the time, because the lack of the degree excluded some Poly students from some employment possibilities. So out of that consideration, we decided to establish what we called a degree transfer program. What this really amounted to was making some arrangements with state colleges such as San Jose or Fresno or some of the others, whereby a student who had completed 3 years here could go there and earn the fourth year and receive his degree from one of those state colleges. Some of our students had transferred at the end of 3 years to places like Oregon State College, Iowa State College, Utah State College, and some others. But it wasn't as, it didn't fill all the needs, because after a student would stay 3 years here, he would have preferred and did prefer to stay here for the fourth year. And so that led us then into a program designed to give the degree right here, and was a transition step beyond the degree transfer activity.
Well, I guess there was considerable opposition to adding another college in California with degree-granting propensities. Is that right?
Well, there's tremendous opposition. People thought that they had learned to think of Cal Poly really as a typical vocational type of school. They didn't realize that even then we were giving considerable general education. Their thinking was that this is something new and different, and the kind of a degree that Cal Poly might give was suspect in the minds of a lot of people around the state.
And also, in those days, we didn't have the situation we have today where every college is crowded to the limits. There was a certain amount of competition for good students in the state. Isn't that true?
Oh, a great deal, yes. No one wanted to give up any of their students to any new institution, that's for sure.
And they recognized that the competition at Cal Poly, where a student could get a fine practical education and top it off with a Bachelor of Science degree, was a formidable one. Is that true?
No, that's right.
Well, Mac, during the next couple of years, of course, we got the permission to grant the Bachelor of Science degree in 1940, but World War II came along pretty quickly, and student enrollment began to decrease. And then, in addition to the small civilian program that was maintained, we had a wartime program. Tell us what that was and how big it was and so on.
Well, there were a number of facets to our wartime effort. We had some technical and vocational training for workers who were going into wartime jobs, communications and shipyard work and things of this kind. Then when the war moved along a little more rapidly, we soon reached the point where it seemed wise to contact the military authorities and see if we couldn't help directly in the war effort. So out of those contacts and the fact that we had only a handful of civilian students by this time, we made some contacts and developed two separate naval programs. One was called a Naval Flight Preparatory School, and the other one was called a Naval Academic Refresher. Now, the Naval Flight Preparatory School, as the name indicates, fit into the picture of the military training just before the flight training proper started. And the courses included mathematics, historical backgrounds of World War I and II, aeronautics, particularly aeronautic engines, physical fitness courses, airplane identification, instruction in Morse code, and most important, navigation, because the Navy had found out by that time that a good many of its flyers were having difficulty with overseas navigation. So out of that effort, about 3,500 students went through this program. All in all, there were 17 Naval Flight Preparatory Schools in the United States, and it's interesting to recall that Cal Poly was the last one closed. And the last period before we closed, a good part of the students coming to us were coming from Pacific overseas assignments, and they had put in for Naval Flight Preparatory Program, and most of the students were that kind. While they were here, our student body activities went on pretty much as usual, except the men taking part were mostly those in uniform. We had only a few civilians. Then the Navy decided that we ought to help further, so a Naval Academic Refresher Program was established. And this program was designed to provide academic training in mathematics, science, and some other subjects necessary for enlisted men to qualify for specialized or officer training, George.
And those men came right in out of the fleet.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, going back just a minute to the earlier program, the Naval
Flight Preparatory
Program. Didn't Cal Poly pioneer a curriculum in that field that was widely adopted?
Well, yes, and maybe just a word of preliminary would be of interest. We received that program without very much notice from the Navy. In fact, it was just a few days before Christmas that we received final word that we were going to be granted this Naval Flight Preparatory School. And with the telegram telling them this came instructions to have our navigation faculty, of which there at that time was to be 14, back in Columbia, Missouri, a day or two after the 1st of January to take their training program. So we got into it in a big hurry. Well, then shortly after the navigation the program was set out pretty well, we received from the Naval Headquarters in Washington information as to what the balance of the curriculum was to consist of. And not much instruction except titles. So one of the courses that was considered important was a course called Academic. This was called Historical Backgrounds of World War I and II. And there was no outline for it. So we employed Hubert Siemens, who was then in the local school system as a principal of the junior high and also worked at the junior college teaching German and history. And he came over and developed an outline for historical backgrounds of World War I and II, and this outline was submitted to Washington and became the accepted outline for all of the 17 Naval Flight Preparatory Schools.
Mac, you're talking about the activities for these Navy boys. I remember one year it was discovered that they had a number of top flight athletes from some of the finest universities over the country, and there was a pressure to develop a high-powered football team. And I remember one of my assignments was to go to all the sports editors in the metropolitan papers and try to whip up some enthusiasm for a schedule for this football team. Now, do you remember what happened to those leading athletes when it was found out that a lot of them were here? Do you remember that?
Well, I can remember enough to know that there were other schools in the Navy system that seemed to need outstanding athletics worse than we did. And most of them went in some other directions.
They were transferred out of here real fast, isn't that right?
That's right.
Mac, right after the war, Cal Poly received a very large number of veterans. Do you have some figures on how that growth took place there in that period?
Well, I have a little information that I recall. I think these figures are approximately correct. And incidentally, 1945 was when we had our first summer quarter, and this was set up primarily to benefit veterans who wanted to complete their graduation requirements as soon as possible. And whereas our enrollment at the time the war broke out was between 900 and 1,000, as I remember, when we opened shop right after the war, 1946 fall, we had 2,044, which doubled. 47-48, that increased to 2,229. By 49-50, it reached about 2,900. So you see, we jumped an even 1,000 in a period of 3 years following the war.
Mm-hmm. Well, that certainly required a lot more faculty members. What happened there?
Well, that's right. We had to hire between 46 and 1950, 155 new faculty members. Now, that doesn't seem like so many in terms of today's hirings, but that was a lot back then at that time.
And as Dean of Instruction, I know that you interviewed a large number of those people and many that weren't employed too, isn't that right?
Well, that's right, yes. We had a lot of folks to hire. And another interesting thing, I think, is that the people that we were hiring following the war were somewhat different than those that had been in our employ prior to that, mostly because the curriculum was expanding and developing.
That's right. Mac, the curriculum offerings were expanding rapidly. What were some of the significant changes that followed this war period?
Well, a lot of these took place in the 1949-50 year and immediately thereafter. The offerings in agriculture were increased substantially. The engineering division grew rapidly, and there were a good many new majors established there. But we had a brand new division set up at that time, It was called the Science and Humanities Division, and this included departments in education, English, health and physical education, life science, mathematics, music, physical science, and social science.
And that was really the forerunner of much that we have now in our applied arts and applied sciences.
That's right. As a matter of fact, that was the, you might say, the first name for that division that we have now.
Mm-hmm. Now, another significant thing that came along about that time was the expansion and so on of our teacher training program. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. In 1947, the State Board of Education approved the college to prepare teachers for special secondary credentials in vocational agriculture and special secondary limited credential in agriculture and a special secondary credential in health and physical education. In 1948, the board took further action and they authorized us to recommend graduates for the general secondary field in any of the following majors: social studies, mathematics, physical science and general science, life science and general science, agriculture and physical education.
Well, certainly this tremendous expansion in curricular activities and the degree granting provision and so on, the name California Polytechnic School didn't fit what was happening at that time. So what happened then in that regard?
Well, the legislature recognized that, and presented a proposal from here, and as a result, the legislature changed the name from California Polytechnic School to California State Polytechnic College. And the following year, the Northwest Association of Secondary and Higher Schools granted the Polytechnic full unrestricted accreditation as a four-year college.
I remember that that was quite a step in the history of Cal Poly.
That's right.
Mac, this was the Northwest Association of Secondary and Higher Schools that granted the college full accreditation, but wasn't there a California Association at that time that was doing the same thing?
Well, no, George. The California Association, which was called the Western College Association, while it was established way back in 1923, wasn't accrediting schools. So that in those early days, there were many California schools that were accredited by the Northwest Association. Most of the state colleges were accredited by that body. Sometime most of the private four-year colleges were accredited by the Northwest Association. And so it wasn't until considerably after 1948 that the Western College Association started accrediting California institutions. So as soon as that development got underway, why, we made application to the California Association of West, or the California Western College Association, which really was the California Association of Higher Schools and Secondary Schools. So we became accredited later by the Western College Association, and today we are accredited by that body, but we also hold an associate membership with the Northwest Association still.
Were some of the problems in those days our lack of cultural subjects or library? I know that you were very interested in the library in those days. What were some of the things that they were demanding before accreditation was given to Cal Poly?
Well, I recall our first effort to become accredited by the Western College Association. We made our application, and the chairman of the Standards Committee of the Western College Association was confused because he didn't think that Cal Poly had enough academic subjects, and so he carried this issue with him to the National Accrediting Organization, which met in Chicago, and in effect said, we don't quite understand what Cal Poly is doing, and we don't see how that we can accredit them because they're a specialized institution without sufficient general education. But interestingly enough, we were already accredited by the Northwest Association of Secondary and Higher Schools. So this made it possible for me, because I was working at that thing at that time, to call the attention of the Northwest people to this problem, and it was finally ironed out. But we had to make two more applications to the Western College Association before we were finally accredited.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know it took a long while, but we finally won out in the end. Now, Mac, when did you leave San Luis Obispo? Where did you go, and for what purpose?
Well, I left in 1959, but I was working with our Southern California operations, the Voorhees campus, and later the Kellogg campus. Before that, I had a position known as Administrative Dean of Instruction, which dealt with instruction development at both the San Luis Obispo operation and the operations in the southern part of the state. And so this might seem a little odd, but it was almost a commuting responsibility that I had to go down south, and we spent about 2 weeks out of every six on the campus down south for a period of 3 years before 1959, when I went down there. So I went down in the capacity of dean of the college, and I remained in that capacity until I retired in the fall, in October of 1966, just a year ago. And during that period, of course, there was a great deal of growth. There was not only in students, but growth in curriculum, growth in facilities. I've said to people sometimes that we had at San Luis Obispo probably 20 years to do what we had to do in the southern part of the state because of the more rapid growth of enrollment in about six.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know it was a very interesting period. Now, Mac, as we close out this tape, what are you doing in your retirement for hobbies and so on?
Well, for the first year since we moved up near Santa Rosa at a place called Oakmont, we've been busy with putting in a yard, landscaping, and all that sort of thing. My most recent assignment up there has been to develop a garden club. They've never had a garden club, so we have a brand new one, and I was elected in September as its first president.
Well, Mac, I know that wherever you are, you're going to be an influence in the community, and you're going to be active and taking part in constructive things. This program has been a presentation in the series As I Remember. This interview has been conducted by George P. Cooper.